that we handed out last week. Maybe they're hanging on your refrigerator or lost. If anybody needs a copy, I made some extra copies. And so if you'd like to do that, that will be a help. Give me a second here to mic up, and then we will be ready to go. Lying. Several of you responded last week to the questions and really did appreciate that. Lying, to summarize what several of you stated, is to speak falsely, to utter untruth knowingly. Okay? Sometimes you might say something that's not true, but you don't know that that's the case, and you're not intending to deceive with it, but to state an untruth, knowing that it's an untruth, with the intent to deceive a person, that's a lie. Another definition is an inaccurate or false statement. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Well, we don't say so help you God anymore. We don't want to offend anyone. But nevertheless, you know, that's what goes on in the court of law. Then the definition for deceit is concealment or distortion of the truth for the purpose of misleading. Now, the key focus there in my mind is concealment of the truth. It's distortion of the truth is involved in deceiving, but concealment. There, I'm just not going to say certain things, okay? I'm going to conceal them. I'm going to keep them hidden, and then I'll just tell you the parts I want you to know. Why? Because I'm wanting you to take a certain view on the matter, and therefore I deceive you, to mislead or falsely persuade is the way another dictionary listed it. And so character, I stated, is what you are. Reputation is what others think you are. Therefore, by deceit, you can create a certain reputation that is not representative of your character. But through deceit, you're able to create that appearance. Now, we looked at several scriptures and we had people respond in their own words what those verses were saying about lying. And then we came to the second part, and that is we began to look at Bible examples of lying. And we asked folks to describe what they lied about and why they lied. We got the second one in Genesis 27:24 covered. Jacob lied about who he was deceiving. I'm going to turn to Genesis 27 because there's a few things there, and looking over this chapter in preparation for the lesson. In Genesis chapter 27, you got a bad situation here. In verse 15, Rebekah, that's Esau's wife, or no, excuse me, that's Isaac's wife, okay? Esau and Jacob were her sons. And Rebekah, it says in verse 15, took goodly raiment of her eldest son, Esau, which were with her in the house. His clothing was there in the house. And Rebekah said to Jacob, here, Jacob's the younger son, here, you put these on. Now she did that because she knew that her husband, Isaac, would tell the smell. I mean, they didn't launder them daily, okay, or weekly, like we do. And therefore, and he was an outdoorsman, he was a hunter, and therefore there were certain smells that were in his clothing. We'll see that come to play. And then it says in verse 17, she gave the savory. Oh, another important thing, verse 16. She put the skins of the kids of goats. Okay? She put those skins that were very hairy, attached them to his hands and to the smooth part of the back of his neck. Okay? And now she knew it was going to happen. And so she did that. Rebecca, you talk about deceit. Good night. This woman had to hit the altar quick. She made a savory meat with bread. She had prepared it into the hand of her son Jacob. She said, here, Jacob, take this into your dad. And so he came to his father and said, my father, now he's blind. He can't see. Okay? He came to his father and said, my father, he said, here am I. Who art thou, my son? He knew that it was only going to be one of his sons that came in. And Jacob said unto his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn. That's a flat out lie. I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless thee. I figure Rebecca knew that Isaac wanted Esau to make a savory venison, a stew, I'm going to call it. And Isaac said unto his son, Isaac, daddy, said unto Jacob, the son, how is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son? See, the father, I'm expecting through Rebecca, said I'd like some of Esau's stew, especially good, maybe venison. And how is it that thou hast found it so quickly? And he said, because the Lord thy God brought it to me. Oh, that's wicked. Not only did he lie to his father, not only was his mother involved in it. You say, I can't imagine that. I can. I've seen too many situations when a mother covered for the lies and the failures of one of the children, son or daughter, rather than to let them reap what they sow, rather than to let them learn and hopefully avoid the problem, they cover up for the kid. They make excuses for them. That is never, never good. That is never going to help. It's going to hurt that son or daughter that the parent covers up and excuses what they've done wrong. And he says, and then he brings God into it, lies about God. He says, God told me. It's worded different there, I know, but that's what it means. God told me. And Isaac said unto Jacob, come near, I pray thee. He sensed something wasn't right. He said, come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not. You know? Something doesn't add up here, Daddy said. He said, come closer. And Jacob went near, verse 22, unto Isaac his father, and he felt him, Isaac felt him, and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. Sure, Rebecca, the mother, the wife, put that kid's goat's skin fur on his hands, behind his neck, and he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy as his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And he said, art thou my very son Esau? I want to check it out again. I want to verify this. Are you my son Esau? And he lied again. Right, flat out lie. Jacob said, I am. And so Isaac, daddy, said, bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's venison, that my soul may bless thee. and he brought it near to him, and he did eat, and he brought him wine, and he drank. And his father Isaac said unto him, come near now, and kiss me, my son. And he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his raiment, just like I referred to, and blessed him and said, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field, which the Lord hath blessed. Therefore God give thee of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee, nations bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brethren, let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be every one that cursed thee, and blessed be he that blessed thee. And it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was barely gone, scarce gone from the presence, he had just got out of the room, that Esau, his brother, came in from hunting. And he also had made savory meat, and he brought it unto his father and said unto him, father, let my father rise and eat of this venison, that thy soul may bless me. And Isaac his father said unto him, who art thou? And he said, I am thy son, thy firstborn Esau. Now see what happened next. Isaac trembled very exceedingly. He was reluctant at Jacob and the deceit. And now he realizes what happened. It struck him and he trembled. He shook. Who? So he says, who? Where is he that hath taken venison and brought it to me? And I have eaten of all before thou camest, and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry. I don't imagine that, you know, shedding tears, needing a tissue. It can't be. Esau knew what happened. And that's the kind of cry, the out. Oh, my goodness. And so Esau said, bless me, even me also, my father. And we don't know about the blessings of the Jews. We didn't live under that kind of life and way of things. And he said, bless me also, my father. Verse 35, and he said, thy brother came with subtlety. That's another good kind word for deceit and lying. And hath taken away thy blessing. And he said, is not he rightly named Jacob? For he hath supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright. And behold, now he hath taken away my blessing. And he said, hast thou not reserved the blessing for me? Don't you have one left? And Isaac answered and said unto Esau, now watch this. Behold, I have made him thy lord. I've made Jacob to be over you, Esau, your younger brothers to be over you. I've given to him for servants and corn and wine and sustain him. And what shall I do now unto thee, my son? And Esau said unto his father, hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me even also. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Now's when he cried tears that flew down his cheeks. And Isaac said, father, and Isaac his father answered and said unto him, behold, now he has a blessing here for him. Thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and of the dew of the heaven from above. And by thy sword shalt thou live and shalt serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass that when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. And Esau, this is what happens when a mother tries to mess up and intervene with her children. And it's always, always, did you hear me? Always going to create problems. And Esau hated Jacob. Now that wouldn't have happened if Mama had not meddled, and if she had kept her mouth shut. She didn't. And she created a hatred in Esau for Jacob. Now, hatred's never right, but I understand why he came to that point. Wherewith his father blessed him, and Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand. I'm just going to hold my peace. Daddy's soon going to die. Then will I slay my brother Jacob." I'm going to kill him. I'm going to take care of this. He's not going to get away with this. I don't want Daddy to know it. I'm going to wait till Daddy's dead. But then I'm going to take care of it. And these words of Esau, her elder son, were told to Rebekah. And she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said unto him, "Behold, thy brother Esau, as touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee thou to Laban, my brother, to Haran, and tarry with him a few days." Yeah, a few days. Going to need more than a few days. "Until thy brother's fury turn away, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him." You don't forget that kind of thing. And within families where this kind of situation happens, okay, may not involve the Jewish blessing. There's other things that they exist for. But in families where this kind of thing happens, the kids don't forget it. They may not say a lot about it. And they may not act it out at the time, especially if you're talking 6 and 7 or 16 and 17. But I tell you, they don't forget it. I've heard too many an adult, 45, 50 years old, tell me about things that happened in the family that did not need to happen. And verse 46, last verse of the chapter. "And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth." Daughters of Heth aren't the problem, woman. "If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do to me?" And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said unto him, "Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Go to Padan Aram and to the house of Bethuel, thy mother's family, and get you a wife there." And then we know that story. Now, he lied about who he was, deceiving and stealing his older brother's blessing. Now I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37. Now in Genesis chapter 37, and this is the story where Joseph told his brothers. Now, in this particular time frame, Jacob, the guy who just stole the blessing, Jacob now is the daddy. Jacob now is the older guy. He's got sons, and the youngest one at the time, Joseph, was having dreams, and he told his daddy these dreams, and he told his brothers these dreams. Nah, you know, maybe not the smartest thing. Joseph said, I've got these sheaves, they bow down to me. And the brothers knew that what he was saying is, you're going to all bow down to me. And I'm going to be the man. Well, of course, brothers didn't like that. Brothers didn't like that. And so what they did when Joseph was out taking care of the field, they captured him. They were going to kill him. But then one of the sons intervened and said, no, we better not do that. And he said, over here's a pit. Let's throw him in that pit. And then a caravan was coming along, and they sold him into slavery. This is not a nice family, but it doesn't have the kind of background that would make for a nice family. You say, well, it's in the Bible. Yeah, I know. God tells it like it is.
Yeah, sure.
To use today's language, okay? And listen to me. Out of such a mess, God still led in a way that his will would happen. In spite of, you hear me? In spite of what they were doing. Now that doesn't mean, well, then it's okay to just go ahead and do what I want, live the way I want, and God will use me in spite of it. No, They didn't expect God to bless them in spite of it. We look back on it and we realize that's what happened. But today, for a person to premeditate, that's our terminology, okay? We're not doing murder here, but we're going to premeditate. To premeditate doing wrong because God blessed some people who did wrong anyway, it doesn't work that way, folks. You're going to let the devil deceive you, and you're going to end up in misery of life, even though you may stay religious the rest of your life. Make it real. Make it real. It's the only thing that'll work. All right, let's go back here. Where are we now? I got to see my notes so I don't get mixed up. Chapter 37, verse 32. So they put Joseph in. They took his coat. Remember, that was a coat of many colors, and so it was obvious whose coat it was. And they killed one of the goats or lambs, and they dipped the coat in the blood. They took it into Jacob. All right, here we are, verse 32. And they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, "This have we found. Now, know now whether it be thy son's coat or no." That's a lie. They knew it was their brother's coat. But they lied to their father. That's a bad thing to lie to your father. That's disrespectful. Our Asian people have a great respectfulness toward the elders. And that's a good thing about them. And we Caucasian whites could learn something from that. There's a TV commercial now. I think it's for AARP. And it shows a young, I believe she's a Japanese lady, taking care of her father. And she's doing, you know, using computer, working from home. And it all goes on and says that she's taking care of her father. And it shows her doing some of that. It's a good thing. And now it says, you know, she's getting stressed. She needs a little bit of relief. She needs some help. And AARP says, you know, go to our website. We've got suggestions that can help you. But it's all in the setting of this Asian family. It's a good thing. All right. So Joseph looked at the coat and he said, "Yeah, it's my son's coat. It's Joseph's." And he said, he concludes, "An evil beast hath devoured him." So much blood on it. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces, torn apart. And Jacob rent his clothes, tore his clothes, and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, "For I will go down to my grave unto my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him. You know, there's a Bible verse that says, "Whatsoever man sows, that shall he also reap." Jacob just reaped what he sowed with his father, Isaac. Yeah, Rebecca, mama said, "Let's put the animal skin on your hand and on your neck and go in and get the blessing." You know, he could have said no. Now, we need to obey our parents. We as adults need to, when our parents are living, we need to honor and respect them. And that brings some level of quote unquote obedience, okay? But I'm telling you, they may suggest something to you that you know is wrong. You know it's even wrong to the point of being sin. Now you're an adult. Quit acting like a seven-year-old and say, "Mom, I love you. Dad, I love you. I appreciate all you've done for me. But I'm not going to do that." "Well, why not? If you really love us, you do what we want." No, that's wrong. And you know it's wrong. If they're Christians, you can let them know it's wrong. The Bible tells us not to thus and such. Now you got they're not adults, they're children in the home. And they need to obey. But it would not be wrong of them to say, Mama, kid's 11 years old, Mama, what you're telling me to do, you know, like you're down at Dollar General, and they've seen you, I'm not accusing you, I'm just generalized, okay? The kids saw Mama tear the price sticker, which is hard to do anymore because of the way they're sort of perforated. But anyway, saw them take the price sticker off of one thing, put it on another. That's also hard to do that because of the barcodes that are used. But the kids saw this sort of thing. Here, take this up and check it out. Mama, you just thus and such. That's not right. I don't want to do something wrong, Mama. You see the problem that a parent can put their child to? Well, go tell the neighbor this and such. And the kid knows this and such is just not right. It's a lie. And they're wanting to deceive. And so Mama sends the kid over. Now it could be Daddy sends the kid over next door with a message. Parents should not put their child in those kind of situations. And I do not personally, my opinion, I don't think it's wrong for a child to speak up. Now where do we go? When the flat, you know, the bottom line is, look, I told you, kid, go over and tell them that. I guess when it comes down to the bottom, kids got to obey the parent and do what they said. But I'll tell you, God's hand of judgment will weigh heavy on a parent for those kind of things. All right, so you see, Jacob reaped what he sowed. This is what he did to his father. Now it's done to him. You know, I take no satisfaction in that. But at the same time, I'm not going to excuse Jacob because, well, he's an old man, you know, and, well, you know, he's going to die soon. There's no sense in, you know, being too harsh on him. There are some common street language terms that would describe that kind of thinking pretty clearly. But we don't use them, and especially not in the pulpit, right? Right, or we shouldn't. All right, now, look, we got to move on. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 22. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 22. I'm going to cover this for you. This is the story of Naaman the leper. Remember Naaman? He came to Elisha. He wanted to be healed, cured of his leprosy. And this is the story where Elisha said, go down and dip in the Jordan River 7 times. And Naaman said, I ain't going to do that. We got better rivers where we live. And then he left Elisha. And his servant said, look, we've come all this way. You've got this leprosy. What's it going to hurt you to do what he says? Just do it. You know, sometimes we may not feel like what we're going to do, but it's still right to do it. So he went down and dipped 7 times, comes up, woo, leprosy's gone. He goes into Elijah and says, this is wonderful. I know now that your God is the God. And so he said, what I want to do is give you a couple changes of clothing. I want to give some silver for your servants. And Elijah says, we didn't do it to get money. We didn't do it for what profit could come out of it. Just, I'm glad you're healed, and just, you know, be on your way. Have a happy trip. Well, so the guy leaves. Naaman leaves, and all of his entourage had traveled with him. And Gehazi, he was the ordinary guy who became a bad guy in the story. Gehazi is the servant of Elisha. He's aware of everything that just transpired, and Gehazi, he decides he's going to go after Naaman. So he goes after Naaman, and he lies. He says to Naaman, hey, you know, we've had 2 young prophets come, and they could benefit from that offer of the change of raiments, the garments, and the silver. And he said, well, look, we'll give them 2 bags of silver. And so gets everything together, two bags of silver for each four, that's four bags of silver, and two garment changers, I think, because I knew it was like two for each boy, each of the servants. Anyway, he says to his servants, here, carry this back for Gehazi. So they carry it back, and they get to the edge of the city, and so they... Gehazi says, okay, that's far enough, fellas. I'll take it from here. Thanks for your help. Appreciate it much. So they turn around and they go back. And then Gehazi goes in, and Elisha says, where you been? Well, he put it that way. And so, but he says, where you been? And he says, nowhere. He said, where'd you come from? He said, I haven't come from anywhere. Now, that's a lie. And Elisha knew it was a lie. And he says, what about where you were with Naaman? What about where we knew that you went? And one lie is said in verse 22, chapter 5, verse 22. And he said, all is well, my master has sent me, saying, behold, even now there comes to me from Mount Ephraim two young men, yet we'll take your blessing. And then verse 25, Gehazi, he went in and stood before his master, and Elisha said unto him, whence comest thou, Gehazi? And he said, thy servant went no whither. I didn't go anywhere. What do you mean, where'd I come from? I didn't go anywhere. One lie about getting the garments required a second lie to cover it up. Now, you all have heard that. You have heard that. That is nothing new. And that is, when you tell one lie, it soon going to come along, but you're going to have to tell another lie. And just as we have seen in many high-profile court cases, they have so many different stories, they can't remember the details they told, and so they just keep telling new stories and new lies, and it soon becomes obvious what happened. And Elisha knew what happened. So what does Elisha do? He says, all right, you wanted that stuff. You weren't content to just live with what God had for us and provides for us. So you wanted to go get that. All right, now you got it. But you're also going to have the leprosy that Naaman was healed from. That's the punishment. That's the punishment. And he ended up all of his life and all of his family with the leprosy. Was it worth it? Was it worth it? Two bags of silver? Two robes, two change of clothing? Well, you know it wasn't worth it. I'm sort of asking a rhetorical question. I know that you're all smart enough to know that it wasn't worth it. Okay, then in chapter 5, or chapter 28 of Matthew, the resurrection of Jesus, a more familiar story. In Matthew chapter 28, verse 13, the religious leaders came up with a lie to cover up for the resurrection. And the guards that were at the tomb, they get to them and they say, look, when people ask you what happened, why the tomb is empty, you tell them some of his people came and stole it. Now the religious leaders knew that the high price for these guards to have left someone to come and steal the body they were supposed to be guarding was the death of themselves. Now we have three bodies in that tomb, okay? And so they said, whoa, and I don't know, you know, this is our head now that's on the chopping block. And the religious leader said, look, we'll take care of it. When they come and they ask you, you just tell them his people stole them, and we'll cover up for you. Nice religious leaders, aren't they? Religious leaders can be some real, what do we say, rat in the woodpile, snake in the grass, and all other kinds of animalistic things. All right, last one here is in Acts chapter 5, verse 8. Sapphira, Ananias and Sapphira, husband and wife. This was a point when people were selling what they had and giving the money to the apostles, the church, and they lived in a communal kind of situation. It didn't work. That wasn't continued. But at this point, Ananias and Sapphira went and sold their land. And then they brought the money, part of the money, and they laid it at the feet of the apostles. And the apostles knew, because the Holy Spirit had told them about it, that this was not all of it. And so what happened when Ananias was confronted, and the apostles said, look, it was yours to begin with. You didn't have to give it to us. But why did you lie to God and say that you did give it when you didn't? And man, Ananias was so struck by that truth, he dropped over dead. They took him out, buried him, and his wife comes in, not knowing what had happened. She's confronted, and when she realizes that the whole scheme has been learned, she too drops over dead. You go, oh, I don't know why they drop over dead about it. Listen, it was a whole different situation that was being lived in at that time. You don't do what society does and try to read into events of history the way things are now today. And so we can't understand how they'd be so overcome by such a thing. Is that maybe because we've become accustomed to lying ourselves to God? And we can't imagine because we don't drop over dead. God's gracious and patient. When he tells us something and we try to deceive him, he ain't fooled. We all know that, but we try to fool ourselves and think different. So here you got two people, husband and wife, pooh, down. Now they don't have any of their money. That's not too smart, is it? No, they don't have any of their money. The apostles got it all now. Yeah, God has a way of doing things. And so punishments must be consistent and equal to the offense. There's always the loss of the desired item, reaping what's sowed. That's Jacob's case. The disease can come out of lying. That's Gehazi's. And truth can become known. In Matthew 28:15, it says that this whole plot of the religious leaders about the resurrection was commonly known among the Jews. So it didn't work. They couldn't cover it up and lie. And then, of course, death can even be the end result. And that was with Sapphira. Thank you, Pastor, for the extra time. And I trust that it'll all, you know, in teaching such a thing, I'm not accusing anybody of lying and all of that. But I wasn't born yesterday. I know how easy it is to be tempted and to, you know, to not with an intention to deceive, but to just not, you know, I'm going to say something, but you know why I'm stammering around. Sure. Father in heaven, thank you for today. Thank you for your loving grace and your patience with us. Indeed, in Jesus' name, amen.